is Joakim Noah of the Chicago Bulls, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
Give it all you got, take your very best shot, and may the best team win. The time is now, the name of the game is action. They're on the floor, and they're ready to score, so let the game begin, and let's see how the balls go.
Tim Gallagher, basketball historian, joins the Chicago Bullseye again. Tim, it's fantastic to have you on, and really excited to have you on because you were at the Summer League over the weekend. Love to hear your tales about the NBA Summer League, what you saw there, and share with us your experiences there.
Absolutely. Well, and I've been going to the Summer League for well over 30 years, although it's taken different shapes and forms and locations. Kind of the early days were at Loyola Marymount, right by LAX up in Los Angeles. At, you know, kind of a more sleepy, under-the-radar event in those days. And now it's evolved to playing in Las Vegas. And I know there's also summer leagues in Orlando and in Salt Lake City, but 22 of the teams are in Las Vegas, and it's a real spectacle there. And there's games going on in two gyms that are connected. The main gym where UNLV plays, Thomas and Mack, and then there's a smaller gym, Cox Pavilion, which is about the size of a high school gym or even smaller than probably a lot of high school gyms. So you kind of have your choice depending on who's playing who to kind of toggle back and forth and what game you want to watch. And for example, the Sixers played the Lakers, and that was the Ben Simmons against Brandon Ingram duel. And there were probably, I heard 16,000 people in the big gym, which again, when I first started going to the Summer League in the early 80s in LA, if somebody had told me 16,000 people would be watching a Summer League game, I would have never believed it. But, so I watched most of that game, but it was so crowded and it was kind of a sloppy game. So I moved over to the smaller gym and was watching the Heat against the Mavs and not so crowded and had a great seat. So it's very, a very flexible event and, a great time where, you know, we were in the gym basically from about 1 o'clock in the afternoon till after 9 o'clock at night, and there's constant games going on. And then
so the games, really quick, Tim, the games are going on simultaneously?
Yes, they kind of stagger the start times where they're not all tipping off at the exact same time. So so you can catch parts of all the games if you really are intent on it. So obviously the Bulls and Celtic game, the day I was there, that Saturday, was my primary mission. I wanted to see every minute of that game and have a good seat for it. So I kind of staked that out, and I posted a picture on Facebook where we were three rows behind the Bulls bench, and that was a great atmosphere. But along with what's going on the court, it's really kind of a who's who of people walking the concourse in the stands. So if you've got a trained eye, and I certainly do, you know, you can run into almost anyone, and you know, just walk in the lobbies, everybody from Tom Thibodeau to B.J. Armstrong to Hersey Hawkins to Spencer Haywood to Jim Boylan is a former Bulls assistant and now an assistant for the Cavs, and he played for Marquette on their 1977 championship team with Al McGuire. And he was just standing, you know, nobody talking to him, standing, you know, out in the concourse. So I went up and spoke with him for a while and shared some stories about him playing for the legendary Al McGuire. And then Denzel Valentine.
Get out of here. Well, hold on a second. So Jim Ball Boylan, I used to call him Ball Boylan because I wasn't a huge fan of his coaching style.
Yeah.
He took over after Skiles was fired. Did you talk to him at all about his experience with the Bulls? First of all, was he a nice guy? And also, did you talk to him at all about his experience coaching the Bulls?
I didn't talk with him about the Bulls. Well, and coincidentally, there's a different Jim Boylan on the Bulls staff now that spells his name a little differently. So, you know, I'm talking about the Jim Boylan that you're talking about. And, well, I kind of broke the ice with him because when he played at Marquette, I was a young guy myself and pretty impressionable and noticing every detail. And he was one of the first players other than Walt Frazier I remember wearing Pumas. So Marquette is, you might know from that ESPN short film where they, you know, it's called Untucked, where it talked about the different jersey styles that Marquette had that were way out of the box compared to what other teams were wearing in those days. And so I just went up to him and said, "Hey, Jim, I just want to tell you, when you were wearing those Pumas in 77, I thought that was so cool." You know, so that kind of broke the ice with them and warmed him up, and then we went on from there. So, and, you know, congratulating him on his championship. He was wearing a Cavs kind of a warm-up jacket. So, you know, obviously just earning a championship ring, I guess, is a nice bookend to his NCAA championship with Marquette back in 77. So people
so
like that are everywhere.
Yeah, nobody noticed him, though, but you, though. I imagine it was a pretty crowded hallway, and you're just standing there, and you engage in conversation, which is pretty cool.
Right. Well, and there were some Cavs fans that, as I was talking with them, people either wanted to come up and get a picture with them, or you know, they knew of him. Obviously, the Cavs were playing that day, so there was some awareness. I mean, he wasn't totally unnoticed, but the atmosphere there is pretty relaxed, where you can go up and talk to anyone. I mean, I didn't want to wait and interrupt him or anything, but Tom Thibodeau was just out in the lobby, having a chat with someone, where if you maybe waited for your moment to come in and, shake his hand, get an autograph, take a picture. I mean, most people are pretty accessible in that kind of setting. And, Spencer Haywood, who was recently inducted in the Hall of Fame, and there's a new documentary coming out about him called Full Court, which he was the first person to basically buck the system and and leave college early for the NBA. In fact, there's some talk where he would like that to be known as the Spencer Haywood rule. So, but that went all the way to the Supreme Court, and that's the name of the documentary, Full Court. So it has both a tie into the basketball court as well as the court of law. So,
sure.
So a fascinating guy like him, and he lives part of the year in Las Vegas. So he was there. And again, these guys are just out in the concourse, like waiting in a concession line, or just standing around, or walking from one game to the next, like a lot of us. So it's really quite an atmosphere. I kind of equate it maybe to sort of like spring training, but all the teams are under one roof essentially for the day. So it's and you can also go in and out once you get a ticket and get your hand stamped. So if you're just although a summer day in Las Vegas, is you're not going to want to spend a whole lot of time outside anyway, but if you wanted to step away for a while or go get something to eat off-site and then come back, it's really set up nicely.
Really cool. So impressions of the Bulls. I said, did you attend any of the games while you were there? And love to get your impressions on some of the young players on the Bulls, the Las Vegas.
Yes, well, I had kind of a quick weekend visit there, so I only saw the Bulls play once. Which was on Saturday against the Celtics. And that was a good matchup and a game that I was excited to see. So the Bulls were coached by Pete Myers, who's one of the assistants, obviously a former Bulls player, and I'm sure most of the listeners know who he is. But, I'll give you my little sketches of the top players I saw on the Bulls and things I think the fans would like to hear. So first of all, Bobby Portis. And I'm a big Bobby Portis fan. We've talked about that since the Bulls drafted him. And a player like Bobby Portis, I've been watching the Summer League enough to know that, what I expect from a second-year player playing in the Summer League. So they've got a year of NBA experience under their belt. Now, maybe they haven't played a lot, but they've traveled with the team, practiced, been in NBA games. So I expect a second-year player that's really on the right trajectory to be an NBA starter or a rotation guy to really stand out in a summer league game. And Portis certainly has done that. He did that the day I saw him, and just love his energy and how active he is on the glass and just his overall enthusiasm too. It's a summer league game, but he's, really pumped up out there and encouraging his teammates. So just a lot of things, little things like that I was impressed with. And, played like somebody that's going to be an NBA starter in the near future. And that's what I expected from him, and it was good to see that. It was good. I know he can score down in the paint, and especially against the summer league level competition, but he stepped out and hit some jumpers as well. In fact, it looks like he's going to get that open three from the top of the key, and so I'd like to see him be more confident taking it. I saw him hit a few. Definitely one three-pointer from the top of the key, and he's got a nice-looking stroke. So I don't know, again, what the offense was dictating and what he was instructed to do, but that shot seems to be open for him. And so I'd like to see him take that on occasion and be confident taking it. So liked what I saw about Bobby Portis and just his energy and size, and I think good days are ahead for him with the Bulls. So I'll move on to the next one unless you had any other comments or questions on Bobby.
No, I agree with you. I thought what I saw him over the weekend, and you're right, the second-year guy who's on the right trajectory, you want to see him almost dominate the summer league, and I thought that's exactly what he did. He clearly stood out and was really impressive. I'm really high on Portis offensively. Defensively, I felt he was really poor last year, and so you want to see improvement there, that he at least becomes adequate defensively. And, you know, as a big guy, you really like to see some, you know, better help defense, hopefully some, you know, ability to guard the rim. And, you know, that's where I really want to see improvement from Bobby. I think he's going to be a really good crossing rotation player, but unless he gets that defensive side of the ball improved, I think the sky is a little bit limited for him, unless he improves on that end more so than offensively.
Right, right. And I certainly agree with you on that in terms of just position defense and how active he is. But certainly rebounding, I love his activity on rebounds and even have some Rodman-like rebounds where he'll tip it and tip it again until he controls it, right? So he really stays after it, and he seems to have a knack for that. And I like the fact that, you know, when there's mismatches, he recognizes it, and he's a load down in the paint, so he'll back his way in, and he's got that little jump hook. Or he also can hit that shot out on the perimeter a little bit too. So as he gains more confidence and gets more experience, I think, you know, athletically and size-wise, you know, he's got the tools. So if he can put all the other elements together, I'm excited about what's to come for him. The next player I was going to talk about is Spencer Dinwiddie, who I know we kind of joked about almost in the podcast in terms of being in that blockbuster Cameron Bairstow trade. But actually,
yeah,
he's kind of been, I think he's been the most pleasant surprise, certainly for the Bulls in summer league, and I think in some of summer league in general, in terms of just his command of the game and his job of running the team. You know, he's 6'6", and I think he handles the ball well. I mean, I think he'd be a real nice third point guard. I know they just signed Isaiah Cannon, who's more of a combo guard, but I could see Dinwiddie having a spot in the rotation and getting some minutes. You know, a player that he kind of reminded me of, and I'm kind of going back in time a little bit, he kind of reminded me of Lester Connor, who used to play in the Bucks, and, you know, was a real solid pro, you know, and you know, not a star by any means, but a guy you could trust with the ball and just kind of had command of the game when he was in there. So, but, you know, I really like the way that he sees the floor and just was pleasantly surprised how good he looked out there. And the other thing is I saw him play in high school. He played for Taft, and I know on past podcasts you might recall we talked about Bryce DeJohn Jones, who, you know, again, tragic, who was killed earlier in the summer. But Dinwiddie was on that same high school team that came to one of our neighbor's house for a kind of a lunch, a catered lunch for the team when Woodland Hills Taft was down here to play in the Holiday Classic. So I actually saw Spencer at the Bulls team hotel and reminded him of that, and he certainly remembered that day. And seems like a real nice way about him, pleasant young guy. And just, again, like, I think his shooting needs to improve. I mean, he's a very good free-throw shooter, and his technique is fine. I just think he needs to get more consistent with a jump shot, but overall, his decision making and running the team has been an unexpected surprise there for the Bulls summer league team.
Agree completely. What did you think? You know, from your vantage point, did you get to see who was what you would call the leaders of the team? I mean, did you see any guys providing any vocal leadership, or what was your take on that as someone, you know, watching from afar?
Right. Well, you know, certainly Portis and, you know, I mentioned more with his energy and enthusiasm, but, you know, he was encouraging to his teammates and, you know, I think took more of a little bit of a leadership role. Dinwiddie isn't a real vocal player out on the court, but, you know, kind of a coach on the floor type of a guy. So I think, you know, the game kind of slows down for him or in a good way, or, you know, he's not, there's a lot of guys playing frenetically in these summer league games. You probably watch, you know, as you watch on TV, some of it gets pretty sloppy and really not very watchable. So what I like about Dinwiddie as well is the game slows down when he's running the show, and not slowing down in the sense of they're not executing, slowing down in terms of execution in a positive way. And that's kind of a good transition to talk about Jaren Grant. So the acquisition from the Knicks, the former Notre Dame player, he's a little more bursty, and again, I know he's slotted at the moment to be the backup point guard for Rondo. And I like what I see at Grant. I was a big fan of him at Notre Dame, and you know, he was on that Notre Dame team that took Kentucky down to the, you know, to the final second. And
right.
In fact, he had the shot that could have, I don't know if it was a tie or winning shot. I don't know if they were down two or three. But anyway, he had the ball in his hands and had a fadeaway from the corner that you know, could have sent the game into overtime or else won it for Notre Dame. So, you know, the fact that he progressed over his career at Notre Dame, became a first-team All-American, I thought, you know, I didn't watch the Knicks a ton last year, but when he was in there, I thought he looked competent. Kyle, he's a little different from the Dinwiddie. I think he's a little more bursty and a little more, you know, high energy. But he seems to play under control with that. You know, again, I think both Dinwiddie and Grant need to improve their outside shooting. You know, and that's an area for the Bulls, certainly beyond McDermott, that people are saying, you know, is going to be a weakness for them. So I think some of these guys, and again, I don't see that these shots are broken on guys like Dinwiddie and Grant, but just, you know, maybe more reps, more confidence, and you know, and picking their spots to score. But I like what I saw Grant as well. And back when the Rose trade happened, I was very excited to see him in the package with Robin Lopez.
How about Valentine? I'm really high in him, and I've been on record as saying I think the guy's going to have all-star appearances in his career. I think he's very underrated. I was trying to come up with a name for a comparable, and I came up with Paul Pierce. You know, not really a great athlete, but he does a lot of things that help you win basketball games, great court vision, et cetera. What do you think of him in the limited time that you saw him on the court? I know he had a bad shooting night, but overall, Denzel Valentine.
Right. Yeah, the negative right out of the gate is he hasn't been shooting a good percentage. But kind of like what I mentioned about Dinwiddie and Grant, I don't think his shot is broken. You know, he has a nice stroke, a nice release. I think the game I saw him as well, I don't want to say it was jitters, because he's a very confident and comfortable player out there on the floor. And so I don't think it was it. But I think just kind of adjusting to the scene and the energy on the court and things like that. And not that he wasn't playing hard, he was, but I think that probably contributed to him maybe not shooting the ball as well as I think he's capable of doing. And the other thing about him, though, seeing him in person, and he's not quite as tall or as thick as I expected him to be. I don't know. I expect him to be a little bigger, both in height as well as strength. But that said, he's a very fluid. He looks like a basketball player, you know, and he moves like one. And
how tall? I mean, did he look 6'6"? I mean, what were you expecting?
I would say he's probably 6'6" in shoes. Yeah, I was thinking he was 6'7" or 6'8", but definitely not. And so probably 6'5", 6'6". But again, as a 1, 2, or 3, that's fine. And I don't think there's any issue with that. And a couple other things I noticed with him. One time he was coming down on the fast break, and you know, and he kind of flared to the 3-point line on the wing, and it was kind of a delayed fast break. Grant, I believe, had the ball in his hands, and Grant passed to the left side of the court, to the left wing. But Grant, I mean, that was fine that he made that choice. But on the right side, Valentine was open at the 3-point line, and I noticed every little thing, and I saw him kind of clap his hands, like, "Get me the ball, this is my shot," right? So I like seeing that energy and that confidence. Like, he wanted the ball, right? He was in a spot where he was eager to get it. The other little critique I might have about him, I he was almost playing a little too loose and a little too he was playing almost like it was a pickup game with some of the passes he was making, which I would like to see, you know, him kind of more earn his way to that. You know, so I'm talking passes, you know, no-look passes or one-hand passes with a little flair on it. And, you know, and I like seeing those kind of plays executed, and it's exciting to see that that's on his mind and he's thinking that way. But I think for his first game or two, or as he's kind of working his way in, I'd like to see him kind of be a little bit more conservative and kind of tighten up his game and not play so much like it's a pickup game, if you know what I mean. But
sure.
But the upside of that, though, is his court vision is very impressive. And he seems to enjoy making a good pass as much as scoring the ball. And although he's not passing up shots, I'm not saying he's overly unselfish. That's another thing I look for in some of these players trying to make teams or on the bubble of making the league or not. When the ball swings to them and it's an open shot and they hesitate or pass it up, for me, that's a big red flag, right? And so I don't see that from Valentine. The other thing I really liked about him is when he wasn't shooting it well, he had the intuition. You know, I said to the buddy that was sitting next to me, you know, when the ball swung to him out at the three-point line, the guy was closing out. I said, you know, he's missed the last few. I think he better put it on the floor the next time he gets it. And sure enough, he did. And he has some interesting moves, putting the ball on the floor or posting guys up. And I remember one time I heard Dan Dockich doing a color commentating of a college game, and he said some player did sort of an unorthodox shot under the basket. And Dan Dockich said, when that player just made that move, that tells me he's been playing some unorganized basketball. And he was meaning that as a compliment, meaning not just running up and down in an AAU game. A shot that you would take when you're playing 2-on-2 or 3-on-3 or somebody like Denzel, I'm sure, is probably playing a lot of 1-on-1 with his dad or his brother, who was a college player at Oakland University, where, okay, you picked up your dribble, you're 8 feet from the basket, what are you going to do? Right? Those kind of shots.
Sure.
And I don't know if you've seen some of the highlights, but he has some of those shots, right, where he'll pivot and shoot a little one-hand, you know, bank shot from the angle. Or so to me, that's exciting to me that he's got an arsenal of shots like that. And his dad, Carlton, who I actually spoke with a little bit, he was sitting right in front of us, so I went and talked to him at halftime, and very approachable and nice guy. And he was a very accomplished player at Michigan State back in the day. So
I know great overview.
Spent a little time on Denzel, but yeah, I think just tightening it up, but just the ideas that he was had in terms of some of the passes he made, looking for his teammates, versatility. You know, other than not shooting a good percentage, I was very very pleased with what I saw, and I think he'll get some minutes in this group this year.
Great insight that you provided about the size, because, you know, I know his versatility is his strength. He can play multiple positions. But it sounds like, based on what you said, he's a 1-3. He's not going to be able to give you minutes at the power forward position. And I know occasionally he may have slipped into that if Michigan State ever went small. But it sounds like in the pros, this guy's he can play the point offensively. He can play the shooting guard position, small forward position. But he's not going to give you any minutes at the four. Unlike, you know, let's say Doug McDermott, who I heard is going to probably have some minutes at the four, or at least they're trying to work with him on that.
Right. And so, yeah, and Denzel is, I mean, he looks in great shape, but, yeah, I don't see him playing at the four, even with a small ball lineup.
I know, but you had a picture of your son, too, with him, right? So you met him. How was he in person?
Oh, he was great. Yeah, we were at the Bulls team hotel at the lobby and caught some of the guys headed out of through the lobby to get on the bus to head over to the game. So, yeah, very very approachable and very, very good with the fans. So, he just has a good way about him. And, you know, he seems off the court, seems to be smiling a lot, and just has a nice way about him. So, yeah, that was a real treat for my son to meet him, because, you know, he was College Player of the Year in some of the wire services. So that was a fun moment as well. The last player I was going to touch on that came on late last season, of course, is Cristiano Felicio. And, you know, he showed some real promising signs, I thought, the last week or two of the season when he finally got some minutes. And
absolutely,
I think he's still a little bit raw and developing. I know he got a lot of fouls. In the summer league, I think they can get up to 10 fouls. So he was certainly using those up. Although I don't think that was an issue for him, I don't think foul trouble, when he was getting some significant minutes late in the season, when with the injuries, and he finally got his time. But I could see him getting 10 to 12 minutes a game as a backup 4-5. You know, he's pretty good at finishing around the hoop. Even though he's not a high flyer, he's got a wide body and seems to have a pretty nice touch around the basket. He seemed to handle himself decent enough when he got the ball, you know, out at the top of the key or high post type things where, you know, they'd run screen roll. So I think he's an intriguing young talent, young player to develop, and, you know, hopefully practicing against Robin Lopez and kind of help toughen him up and get him more seasoned. But, yeah, I think he looked like a competent backup, and, you know, hopefully he's evolved enough maybe to get 10 to 12 minutes a game.
I agree completely. I think there's a lot of guys in Bulls fandom who kind of consider him potentially as a starter. You know, I don't see that. I think he's going to be a career backup, but, you know, that's nothing wrong with that. If he can give us 15, 20 minutes a game, you know, my biggest issue with him is I think he's always going to be in constant foul trouble. It just seems like every time I've watched the guy, he's averaged about a foul a minute. You know, so, but, you know, that comes along with learning the game and trying not to pick up those dumb fouls. But overall, he's been impressive. No denying that. So,
like, right. Well, and if you can blend them in on the floor with the lineup with, you know, when Wade's out there and Rose is out there and Jimmy, you know, where it's not garbage time, right? Where he's being surrounded by the elite players that he's not going to be asked to do as much and just kind of take what the game gives him, right? Set screens, rebound, and, you know, do some of the dirty work and hopefully be surrounded by, you know, a more experienced group that'll help guide him along. And, you know, there's been some good young big guys that have developed in Miami. Obviously, Whiteside's a good example of that. And I would assume Wade was one of those guys that was kind of helping him move along.
Great point. I'd like to move on now to the recent signing the Bulls just inked, I think, today or yesterday with Isaiah Cannon. Can you give us a little 411 on him?
Yes, and being a big fan of college basketball, he was a key player on some really, really good Murray State teams. So Murray State made some noise in the tournament, you know, really over a number of years. But when he was there, you know, they had some outstanding teams, and began his career with the Houston Rockets, and then has been on the Sixers, which obviously they've been a very weak team the last couple of years. So it's kind of hard to put it in good context, but. I know he had some big games for the Sixers, as well as with the Rockets early in his career, and kind of, you know, more of an explosive player, a bursty player. So I could see him kind of having a sort of like an Aaron Brooks type role with the team, right? We've talked about Aaron Brooks, obviously, in the past where, you know, you don't quite know what you're going to get for sure, but he's capable of a 12-point quarter, you know, here and there, kind of out of the blue, right? And, you know, one of those guys that, is he on tonight? Is he going to give us some active scoring? You know, he's really a combo guard, too undersized to be a two full time, and probably more of a shooter and not a pass first guy to be a one. But, another player he kind of reminds me of that's in the league is Marcus Thornton, you know, who's kind of an instant offense guy that's bounced around to a couple teams, I think most recently on the Houston Rockets at LSU. So, you know, I see him as that kind of a player. The other thing I thought was interesting, and I like to kind of follow the lineage and family trees and connecting the dots of these guys. Well, the coach for Isaiah Cannon at Murray State was Steve Fromm. Steve Fromm is now the coach at Iowa State, who succeeded Fred Hoiberg there. So I'm sure.
Interesting.
I'm sure Fred and the rest of the Bulls organization, I mean, certainly they're going to do their homework on everybody there looking to acquire or sign, but I think there's a good insider connection there where at Fred's alma mater and where he coached before jumping to the Bulls, Isaiah Cannon's coach is there now and coached him on some great Murray State teams. So I'm assuming that additional insight helped influence the Bulls to sign him. And I've always maintained that if a player is a star player of the year type player, especially a guard in a mid-major league, they're in the Ohio Valley Conference, I believe, Murray State is. So if you're a player of the year as a guard in a league like that, I think NBA teams should take a long, long look at you. And obviously Houston did, and they drafted him, and he's been in the league now for a few years. And why I say that is the kind of guys you're going to see in those leagues are not the full package of a guard that will probably make it to the NBA. However, you're getting all kinds of different looks that you're going to play against, right? So you might play against a guy that's just a shooter and doesn't have the athleticism or skill to play in the NBA. You might play against another guard, again, that the major schools, the elite top 25, top 30 teams pass on. You might have a guard that's just exceptionally quick and can get to the rim but can't shoot from the outside. So a guy like Isaiah Cannon is having to play against all of these players that are more specialized maybe in one area. And I think that gives you an interesting experience as you're trying to develop your game, where you're seeing almost like pickup games, right? Where you're going to see all kinds of guys out in a pickup game and probably not well-rounded in terms of, you got guys that are shooters, you got guys that are drivers. Every once in a while, you got a guy that's got a whole package. But So I've kind of been excited
interesting
about
Isaiah.
I've been interested in Isaiah Cannon since he was lighting it up at Murray State on some very, very good teams.
You know, there's a long line of guards like this. The Bulls have signed from Nate Robinson, DJ Augustine. You mentioned Aaron Brooks, kind of like off the scrap heap on bargain contracts that have really worked out for the team. And, let's hope this continues in that trend.
One other quick thought is, I saw Ben Simmons and Ingram play, so obviously a lot of people are probably interested in what I thought of them. And
great.
The game I saw was a very sloppy game. That was the one where there were 16,000 people. It was on ESPN, so probably a lot of people saw it on TV. So it was not a pleasant game to watch. Ingram was 3 of 12 from the field, 0 of 3 on threes. So, I don't know how you can sugarcoat that in any fashion. And he looked pretty thin, and, is he ready to step in and be a starter on an NBA team this year? I don't see it, but maybe the Lakers are bad enough or they're willing to help develop him that'll happen. But a long way to go before there's stardom for him. Simmons is a little more intriguing, certainly in the open court, because he's a guy that can get a rebound and maybe like a Draymond Green, get it and go. And he's more in a, certainly a, maybe a three or a four's body, like a point forward type body. But the game, I just double-checked the box score. So he had 8 points, 10 rebounds, 8 assists, but 7 turnovers. So, again, I'm not putting a ton of weight into the 7 turnovers, although that's a fairly high number. I don't know. I'm not sure what his go-to move. What's his primary move? How's he going to score the ball? And the fact that Philadelphia, and I know they're doing some things to try to enhance their roster, and maybe they're going to move some of these young big guys, and with the Colangelos running things now, there's probably going to be some changes. But, unless he's really paired with a strong veteran mentor surrounded by that, I'm just not sure how effective he's going to be and how many games they're going to win.
And there's a lot of rumblings that, I would agree. I think that Oklahoma City, if Westbrook's not going to give a commitment to play with them after this year, you've got to find a trade partner. And if I were the Lakers, I'd be all over that. Get them to L.A. and give them whatever you need. Russell, whoever it is, Ingram, I don't care. Get that guy in his prime and, get things turned around there. But what say you?
With Westbrook, the Lakers have always been built around a star system, really almost the history of their franchise. And after seeing Russell last year as a rookie, seeing him in summer league, seeing Ingram, I guess these guys could be stars someday, but it's not going to be next year, and it might be 3 to 5 years, if ever. So I would think Westbrook, who we've talked about many times, is certainly a top five player in the league, and that might even be a little shorter list than that. But I would think the Lakers would be very desirable for him to try to end up with the Lakers. That's his hometown, obviously. But the mystery is, how can they be assured he's going to stay? But I would think that if you're OKC, you'd ask for kind of a king's ransom, and then maybe they see some things in Ingram and Russell that they could develop. And I would certainly ask for those two. I don't know about Clarkson. I don't know about Randall. I'd really focus more on Ingram and Russell. I think they have a better upside, but I don't know how enamored Sam Presti at OKC is with those two. My intuition is they are going to move Westbrook somewhere, and the trick is it going to be somewhere where Westbrook's going to commit to stay long-term because he just has the 1 year left. But that'll be interesting to track, that's for sure.
And to wrap things up, let's talk a little bit about Tim Duncan. Obviously, he announced his retirement this week. What a fantastic player, what a fantastic person, what a great figure, you know, for the NBA for all these years, and now he's going off into the sunset. Love to get your opinion on him and love to hear what you think about his career and general thoughts on the retirement of Tim Duncan.
Yes, well, I remember the first time I saw Tim Duncan play, and as I mentioned, I've gone to NCAA tournament games for pretty much my whole life, and as I became an adult, traveling around the country to different games, more on the venue, and you just, you know, take your chances of what teams you end up seeing, but it always seems to work out. Well, I remember being in Lexington, Kentucky, when Wake Forest was there. It was Tim Duncan's freshman year, and I frankly didn't know that much about him. I mean, he wasn't a McDonald's All-American. You know, he's from the Virgin Islands, so not, you know, not on the radar of recruiting. And again, that was 25 years ago, too, so things were a little different then where some of these guys weren't as well-known, even the top elite guys. So I remember seeing him in Lexington, and he was like a young colt. You know, he had these long arms and really was a presence in the paint. Still didn't have his offense that polished yet, but just really controlled the glass of that game. And I remember thinking, wow, this is a guy to watch and keep an eye on, and he's got a bright future. And obviously played with a certain calm that he always played with, right? He wasn't, too emotional, you know, up or down, and just went out and took care of his business. And so I've kind of kept an eye on him since then and have certainly appreciated his career. The amazing thing, too, is I think I read somewhere that he may be the last four-year college player to become an NBA superstar. I haven't really studied that, but it'd be interesting to go back and look at, you know, the all-stars and elite players in the league since Tim Duncan joined the league, and how many of them were four-year college players. And off the top of my head, I couldn't think of any. So that might be right. I guess Draymond Green, you know, would be in the conversation of being an NBA superstar that was a four-year college player, although that was kind of an unexpected, you know, accomplishment for Draymond. You know, no one really saw that as he came out of Michigan State. But it's kind of cool that Tim kind of did it the old school way, and, you know, and kind of took the long road. And he would have been the first pick of the draft several years at Wake Forest and just opted to stay in school and keep working on his game and enjoyed the college experience. And he's kind of stayed on that steady path the rest of his basketball career. And when I think of him, obviously one organization, one coach for his whole NBA career is, you know, very rare in this NBA world we are experiencing now. And, you know, I just think of his moves down on the block. I guess my favorite move of his, though, is just that signature bank shot from the angle from, you know, maybe 8 to 10 feet out. But, you know, he certainly had a variety of moves, his primary move, his counter move, but that bank shot from the angle is the one I always think of when I think of his go-to scoring move. And as you said, just a class act the whole way. And, you know, things just aligned so well for him in terms of having David Robinson there, his first year or two in the league, to be a mentor and teammate when things got off the ground for him in his early days with the Spurs. And the fact that the Spurs, just kind of like it is for Kawhi Leonard and with Tony Parker, just that culture of the Spurs is so perfect for him, kind of the whole understated approach, but it's understated excellence in the way that, you know, the dignity and class that Tim Duncan has displayed over these last 20 years is just something to cherish.
Where do you rank him all time?
Oh, wow. That's a tough one. He'd certainly be on the short list for the all-time power forward, right? You hear that quite a bit. You know, you hear Karl Malone, maybe a few other guys, Kevin McHale.
Well, he's got Karl Malone beat just strictly on the fact that he's actually won titles, you know?
Exactly. I know Karl Malone scored a few more points, you know, and is a little higher on that side of it. But obviously the rings and championships are what seems to carry a lot more weight, certainly, and Tim Duncan certainly has that. Maybe McHale's right there with him in terms of as a winner at that position. Yeah, certainly, you know, not many ever like him. And you know, kind of in retrospect, it was good to see, even though they lost to OKC in that final game, that Tim had a good game. That overall series didn't go so well for him, but that he was able to finish his, what we now know is his last game, you know, played well statistically and was out on there on the floor for the rest of the fourth quarter, trying to find a way for the Spurs to make some magic. They couldn't quite do it, but so I think he went out on a pretty positive note, even though it wasn't with a victory.
Yeah, great point. He's just a class act, and he's going to be missed. Tim, thanks for joining the Bullseye again, man. Love to have you on. Looking forward to the next discussion very soon, I'm sure, on you know, the remaining signings and see where the Bulls are at as we finish up the summer league.
Absolutely, Fred. Well, always a pleasure, and look forward to talking to you next time.
All right, my man. Talk to you soon. Thanks again.